Hello and welcome, everybody. My name is Ryan.
And my name is Heather.
And this is the Confidence Through Cabaret podcast. And today we are super privileged and super excited and gloriously happy to welcome a New York Times bestselling author, slow cooking and slow living expert, the amazing Stephanie O'Day. Hi, Stephanie. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. And thank you for that introduction. It was a nice way to start the day.
Yay. Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Just to start things off, we'd love to just sort of have a, let's talk about you. You know, what? How did you get into this? What's your story? You know, you're a multi, you know, time bestselling author. Let's get into it.
Well, my grandma always said, that and a dollar will get you a cup of coffee. So, it sounds really impressive, but, in general, I'm a mom of three and, I'm actually currently, cause it's 6 a.m. when we're recording it, I'm wearing fuzzy slippers. So I spend most of my day, just being a very normal suburban mom and I've gotten to do some cool things, but the way it got started was in 2008, I made a New Year's resolution to use a crock pot slow cooker every day for a year and write about it on the internet. And this was back in 2008. So food blogging and websites weren't as commonplace and everywhere at the time. So it seemed remarkable to me at the time, but I guess now there's been an awful lot of people who have done similar things. But I got started really because I needed to find a way to work from home. I had a background in English. I liked writing. And I also was running preschool centers for underprivileged children. And I was lucky because my kids could come to work with me. So I sort of thought, oh, okay, this is a great way that I could still be the hands-on mom I wanted to be and work full-time. Mm. But my then almost two-year-old was getting sporadically sick and we didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. And so I assumed it was daycare germs. And so I quit right on the spot. Right. And we live in the San Francisco area, which is quite expensive. And so my husband's like, no, that's not going to work. You can't not work here. So I had a major fire in my belly to create something from nothing. And then just as a side note, my then two-year-old is now 16 and she's perfectly healthy. She's fine. We found out that she had celiac disease, which is a gluten intolerance, which everybody knows about then now, but back then that was that tail end of 2006 and it wasn't, it wasn't as prevalent. People didn't know. Now everyone knows somebody who's gluten-free, but at the time, it was a little scary. Yeah. And so I did spend a lot of time researching. And so because of that, all of the recipes on the site are not only made in a crock pot, they also happen to be gluten-free. Right. So it was a very sort of tightly focused niche, which Google likes. So if you're searching for gluten-free crock pot recipes back in 2008, you had nowhere else to turn except for my website. And so because of that, it took off.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I'm sure your recipes wouldn't have taken off if they weren't good.
Yeah.
So definitely a lot of trial and error. Yeah. I posted about the good, bad, and the ugly. So I think because of that, and I was a real person and I was authentic about my failures, readers enjoyed that and they liked it. I am not Martha Stewart. I am not glossy. My pictures are not the best. But I really am a real person and I really did do this. Yeah. And so so it worked. It worked really well. And then actually right around this time of year in 2008, I made creme brulee for Valentine's Day in the crock pot. And I was so proud of myself and I just thought I was amazing. And so on a whim, the Rachel Ray Show was playing in the background. Right. And at the very end of the scroll, it said, do you have something to share with Rachel right into the show? So I wrote in and I broke all of the internet rules. I wrote all caps and I'm like, I am the best. I am amazing. I know how to make creme brulee in the crock pot. You should have me on your show. And so a few weeks later, producers called and I was able to go on the show, which was fantastic. And life changing. I really enjoyed it and made me realize that I could do this. I could create something from nothing. And so since then I've expanded and I write a lot about slow living now. And and I try my hardest to just coach and mentor and be a help to other busy moms. Primarily moms find me online, mostly for the slow cooker recipes, and then they stick around for the rest of the things.
Amazing.
That's incredible.
So I'd love to talk about slow living, but before we do, why a crock pot?
So I'm not a good cook, Heather. Now I am, because I've made an awful lot of things. But at the time, I was a young wife and mother. I got married at 21 and had my first at 24. And I was frazzled. I was overwhelmed. And it was difficult to do all of the things that you're supposed to do, as well as caring for this tiny little human being who truly wanted to be attached to me at all times. So it wasn't actually safe in that 4 to 6 p.m. kind of witching hour that infants go through to be chopping onions and standing over the stove. So I liked the idea of putting on the food. I'm highly caffeinated. I'm coherent. I can dump everything in and push a button and walk away. And so that is truly exactly how I cooked, how I preferred to cook. And even now, I work out of the house again full time. It's hard to get dinner on the table when you're out of the house and working all day. So in the morning, while I'm still cleaning up the breakfast dishes, I can plop things into the pot and push the button and walk away.
Amazing. Amazing. And what are, I mean, creme brulee is a really, it's not one people would think of when they think of slow cooker.
Yeah.
No.
what are the most kind of the least likely things that people would think of that you can actually make in a slow cooker?
Sure. So one thing that's doing really well on the site right now is yogurt. And so I think because of the pandemic, people are becoming more domestic and are realizing that a fancy yogurt cooker that you can spend an awful lot on is really just a very slow and low heat, which is your crock pot. So so I found a way back in 2008 to make Greek yogurt in the crock pot. And since then, that recipe has sort of morphed and taken a life of its own online. But people are coming back to their roots with the pandemic, and it's not as easy to just maybe pop out to the corner store as it used to be. And so they're trying to cook more at home and create things at home.
Yeah. Wow. I love what you were saying earlier about the fact that, you know, it was for you, it was all about showing up authentically on the internet, which and then breaking the rules of how you do that by, you know, appearing and just sort of saying, no, I'm good at this and I do this. how did you come to that strength of being able to say, actually, you know what, I'm not going to try and create this kind of image for myself? Because a lot of the stuff online is about creating an image that's often kind of unapproachable. You know, perfection is often seen as one of these things, you know, we always have to achieve. And obviously perfection is unobtainable and just not possible. But, you know, the beauty of things is showing up as we are authentically. How did you arrive at that?
I wish I could say that I... had some sort of like metaphysical awakening, No,
that's even
I just
better.
Didn't, I honestly just didn't know any better. Yeah. I, what was helpful is this was back in 2008. Mm-hmm. And so Pinterest didn't exist. Yeah. Twitter was just getting its start. Facebook wasn't even really a thing. It was just for college kids. Yeah. So it was a bunch of moms sitting behind their computers talking back and forth to each other. Right. So I already knew I wasn't a Martha Stewart-y kind of Real Simple magazine glamour person. I already knew that about myself. Instagram wasn't a thing. I was just taking pictures with our camera and putting it up there. And the lighting was bad and it wasn't food styled in any way, but it was real. And I enjoyed it. And it wasn't until I started doing more television work did I realize how fake things were. I didn't know. So I was actually filmed for an infomercial for the Ninja cooking system. And so that was a really big production. I was on a sound stage. They flew me into Boston and we were in this big warehouse and they built this fake kitchen set where if you open a cupboard, there's a brick wall behind it. Like I really didn't know this was a thing. And you guys are in theater, so you know that things are fake. I didn't. So little things with the infomercial was fascinating to me because they wanted like sizzle noises and different things. So they were boiling water behind the stage and then pouring it in to create steam. So when you lift the lid, steam was there. And it was so like against my brain, like, this isn't real. And so one of the lines in the teleprompter is they wanted me to say, this is the best stew I've ever had. And I couldn't say it. I kept fumbling the line because it felt so fake, because all stew tastes the same. No one in a million years is ever going to authentically say, this is the best stew I've ever tasted, because nobody talks that way. So that is probably why my television career was very narrow.
Amazing.
I fully love that.
Amazing, amazing. So then you went on your journey towards slow living. So tell us a little bit more about slow living.
So slow living, after a while, I started feeling a little phony baloney, continuously making up pot roast recipes. So same back with the beef stew, the way recipe writers write recipes is they just change one or two ingredients, give it a new name, and then it's a new recipe. And it started to not sit right. My book publishers and I do have a literary agent were saying, no, that's what you need to do. But again, it was starting to just feel a little wrong. And then in 2017, actually more like 2016, 2017, my grandma was sick. And so I was helping my mom take care of her. And I kind of stepped away from the internet and social media. Sure. And I liked it. I liked that sort of break of not having to like feed the beast. And then also at that same time, the Instant Pot hit the market. Mm-hmm. The Instant Pot is just nuts. They spent whole bunch of time and effort advertising for it. And on Black Friday of 2016, they sold like 60 million units in a day. And it was just insane. Jeez. It was just insane. So everywhere, every garage, every cupboard has an Instant Pot in it. And so people were writing to me. They were like, how do I translate my recipes? How do I do this? So I bought one and I goofed around with it. And I just didn't like it. It doesn't suit me. So yes, you can put a frozen chicken in at 4 p.m. and it'll be done in 45 minutes, which is appealing to many, many people, but not to me, because I like cooking in the morning. I don't want to think about it. So to me, having to worry about dinner at 4 p.m. is actually kind of stressful. Yeah. I want to know what I'm having for dinner by 7 a.m. So then I don't have to think about it again. So while I totally got the appeal, and my agent was like, just do the same book, but just put it in the pressure cooker. Like, this is easy money. Go for it. And then it's tricky because my husband's like, yes, go for it. But it didn't fit right. I just didn't like it. So, and then I started, had this like little voice, like, just because you can do something fast, it doesn't mean you should. And that's what feels the most real to me. So yes, I'm probably turning down money. I don't personally like it. I don't like that sort of frenzified hustle, do more, be more, achieve more, make more, go, 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 go. It doesn't feel nice to me. And I don't want to raise my children with that sort of frenzified world. And a lot of social media is that of constantly doing more and being more. And I want to to show my kids that you can be exactly who you want to be and do the things you want to do, and just sort of have trust and faith that opportunities will present themselves in a sort of organic way. You don't have to go chase them down. They'll sort of fall in your lap, which is how I got to meet you. I don't know how we met, but you just sort of fell in my lap. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember reading a post that you were talking about slow cooking and slow living. And I went, that's confidence.
Thank you. I never feel confident. So I guess confidence comes in doing. You'll have to coach me on that a little, Heather.
Yeah. I mean,
I always feel like, okay.
I just remember the first time we talked and you said, I don't really talk about confidence. It's like, how is this not confident, right? This is about figuring out what honors you, what fits right with you, what's authentic, in line with your values. And everything you're talking about is that.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to say, oh, the world is telling me, your editor and even your husband, I mean, that, you know, it's really hard to turn that down and go, actually, that's not aligned with me. I can tell you now, for like without a second of hesitation, I would have done that if people were telling me to do that. Mm. Do you know? And I think, you know, the fact that you can get quiet and say, no, what is honoring what I want? And I love, as a mother, that you say, this is not how I want my children to be. You know, because we very often don't model that. And then we go, I wish my children was more honoring of themselves. Well, did you honor yourself? I mean, that's the bit. So I see that as so clearly connected to what confidence means for us.
Yes, absolutely. You
know, we can tell when somebody's being fake. We can tell when it's inauthentic. We can tell when it feels like a bit of a ripoff. Mm. And
So and it's interesting the online space, it's sort of like it's like a cheap man's cologne. Does that make sense? Like, sure. You know it when you like, oh god, that's horrible, and then it just lingers and I don't want to ever come across that way.
And look, if you're into Instant Pots and you're into that and that fits your lifestyle, then cool.
Yeah.
But it's that bit about what fits you know, and that's what's so great about, you know, we never really fully define confidence, because it's about what do you need to do that honors you. And if that means that hour in the morning for you is about doing something else, and the 45 minute frozen chicken is, I have to be honest, I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. Because that fits me, because, you know, but that's the thing, is, you know, our pace is so important for, you know, being aligned to who we are. Yeah. So what else do you do that's about slow living?
Lately I've been working, in kind of a group coaching capacity with a very small group of women. And I have a Simple Shortcuts to Peace course. And I was trying to sort of encapsulate what the feeling is that women are striving for. So yes, we want everything working properly. We want the white picket fence and the finances and everything in alignment. But it's that feeling of contentment and peace, and just sort of climbing in bed at the end of the night, knowing, you know, I did okay today. Everybody got fed. Everybody's alive. The house didn't burn down. I got some laundry done. I actually fulfilled my work responsibilities, and I sent those emails and I submitted that project. And so it's that sort of feeling of peace. And so I created this peace pyramid, which is really hard to say. But I look at it as the pyramid, and that tippy top piece is peace. The top segment, I guess I should say, is the peace segment. And what I found from reading a lot of self-help and personal development books is they start with the peace component first. They want you to meditate. They want you to journal. They want you to become one with nature in Kumbaya. And that works for some people.
Yeah.
But if you've got a super busy household, and you're just trying to juggle all of the balls, you're not going to spend time doing that for yourself. And so I created the peace pyramid where the bottom, the foundation is getting your time management in alignment, your health and your finances. So that's your very base of the pyramid. And then from there, you can build up and you can tackle your home organization and the relationships you have in your life. And then when those sort of puzzle pieces fit together, you do have that kind of grounded, solid foundation that then you can put the tiny little triangle of peace on top. And then you realize, I can spend time in the bathtub. I can go and spend time doing the things that I want to do to feed my soul, but the rest of my life isn't going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Because you can't sort of hope and pray that all of a sudden your finances are going to work out if you're deep in debt or you don't have a plan for retirement. You really do need to spend some time focusing on that, and just ignoring it and hoping and wishing and praying it'll go away isn't going to give you that sort of sense of contentment and peace that you're looking for unless you tackle it. So there's work involved. And so the program I do is 6 weeks, and we work on each section of the peace pyramid at a time, 1 week at a time. But what I'm finding is everything sort of encapsulates life coaching. And so over the pandemic, I wrote 4 books that I wanted to get out of my brain that weren't about crockpotting or slow cooking. They were there, they were percolating. I was waiting for a sign from the universe to write them. And I guess the universe gave me a global pandemic. And so everything was.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, universe. What was so funny. So I have this year's vision board behind me, but last year's vision board was filled with slow down, relax, go within. And then the universe
manifested this.
Yeah. So actually it's like funny. This year's vision board is about teaching and connecting, and I like the imagery of the lighthouse and be the lighthouse. And the lighthouse doesn't run around the beach going, look at me, chase me. No, the lighthouse stands firm and proud and guides people towards her. So that's the imagery that I've chosen for myself for this year. Which is silly. I think we're going off topic. I apologize.
No, not at all.
No, it's not.
That's exactly what we were. Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, just taking that time, and whether it's a vision board or whether it is meditation or whether it is journaling or whether it's just sitting quietly and moving or the fact that you know what your energy is about is something that most of us don't take the time to do.
This is very true.
You know, so my energy usually is running around the beach going, look at me, woo! Oh, who wants to play? You know, really, truly is. But it is not where my energy is right now. And I think this is the first time that I've listened to that, mostly because we're still locked down in the UK. Thanks very much. Now I know where the source is. But I think this is the first time that I've truly have ever done that, to listen to that energy. And people keep telling me to do things. And I keep saying, stop telling me to do things. Yeah. I'm in a feeling cycle right now. You need to leave me alone with the doing.
Yeah.
But I've never paid attention. I knew about this. I talked to you about this, but I never paid attention to it. And I love that your slow living tells you what's in alignment for you and where your focus needs to be.
Yeah.
And that guides you. And that's that. The lighthouse imagery is amazing.
Mm. Yeah. It's so funny. This is actually, so I wrapped it and I put it under the Christmas tree for myself. And so it looks like a shiny, huge diamond, but it was $14.95 on Amazon.
Love that. Always here for that. Oh, we are something shiny, and I'm like, yeah.
I was just gonna say, we are the beacon of all this shiny. I mean,
that's what's keeping me grounded this year. So I'm like, okay, calm down, Steph. Be the light. Just relax. Just chill. Yeah. It's okay. But it was so funny. The first day I wore it to work, I forgot how like large and gaudy it is for me. And so one of my girlfriends like, did you get a huge ass diamond? I'm like, I did for $14.95.
Yeah. Yeah. What the? I mean, even right there, there's the confidence again, right? I did. It's for $14.95. See, most of us, especially women, would have gone, no, this was a cheap thing. And almost apologetically.
Yeah.
And your communication, your message, your work is unapologetic.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that because that's not me. And that's unapologetic. Mm-hmm. And that you are living the confident energy that we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just so wonderful. It's just so wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think you should come into my room every morning and boost me up. I appreciate it.
This is what we'll be doing from now on. It's just morning for Stephanie. We'll do this every day.
We'll do.
Live stream on Facebook.
So where do you think you learned this tuning in and this, I can only say the word alignment again, this inner knowing of who you are. And
so it's really interesting. One of the books that I did write is, it was a memoir, only because I just wanted to get it out of my brain and I wanted to share with my three daughters. So I wrote, I titled it The Mommy Blogger Next Door, AKA How I Became the Crockpot Lady. And so because I had to spend some time thinking about where I am now and how it happened, it's very anti-feminist because I just wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And I was in college classes thinking, all right, whatever, I'll get a degree. It'll be fine. I'll get a degree in English. I don't know. Maybe I'll teach. I don't know. It doesn't really matter because I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. And it sounds so silly, but in a long, convoluted way, that is the life that I've created for myself. And I don't know why exactly, except for perhaps maybe because my own mom worked full-time. And you always want what you don't have. So I was envious of the girls whose moms were home and made their bed and had chocolate chip cookies waiting for them after school. And so I think I had this sort of fantasy of wanting that for my kids, which is so interesting now as an adult, because I see my parents are relatively young and they have retired in a really lovely and sustainable way and are now helping with my children and my brother's children. So if they hadn't worked the way I didn't want them to at the time, I wouldn't have them as the grandparents I need now. So none of it makes any sense. But age 16 to about 22-year-old Steph had this envisioning of, I just want to do what I want to do and get paid for it.
Yeah.
And isn't that, you know, the definition though of any of feminism, you know, the idea that, you know, choice is the main thing. And if your choice was always to do that and was to do that, and that's to make your, you know, to do it this way and to live your life on your terms, I'm pretty sure that's the definition of that.
Yeah, it is.
Of feminism. It depends. Yeah. I'm in San Francisco, so I don't know.
I would say it is. I would say that's kind of the point, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we all define success differently,
right?
And some of us define it by labels and some of us define it by lack of labels. Mm-hmm. I have children that grown up, my children are grown up now, and I they are entirely different. Mm-hmm. And my late husband and I used to have a discussion about what defines success, and it's like, actually, doing what serves you, that's it for me.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because the older I get, success is such a moving target. Mm-hmm. And when you realize that this is it, this is the life, and it's essentially a game, mm-hmm. and you need to enjoy the game, because if you have all of these arbitrary goals you're trying to reach and then you've met them, it has to be a moving target. Otherwise you just sort of shrivel up and go within. But I don't know when to start teaching that. I mean, they certainly don't teach that in school. And so I try and drop a little like life lessons to my own kids. Like, no, this is a game. You've got to enjoy the journey and that type of thing. But in a way, when it comes to parenting, and you're not going to know if you did it right for a really long time. And that's tricky.
Yeah.
But then you do have a lot of time to fix it, I guess.
Well, it's hard to undo. And they are their own person. So some of them will want to emulate what you're doing, and some of them will want to do the opposite because, like you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think acceptance of who they are and what serves them, you know, you look after them, you guide them. I'm by no means an expert, but I can tell you that both my strengths and mistakes were based on what I modeled or failed to model.
Mm. Okay.
So it wasn't about the conversation, because it's not about what you tell them. You could tell them till you're blue in the face if you're not living it. So self-care or, you know, those kind of subjects, if you're not doing it, you could tell them to do it, but there's the modeling the way is the way. And that's the same for pretty much anything. That's the same with, you know, when I talk to businesses about leadership and things, it's like, what are you actually saying versus what are you doing? Because the doing is what people are going to point to.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You're absolutely correct. So it's always interesting to me. Well, and you're in the UK. I really like your tabloids, which sounds horrible. So don't judge me. But it is always fascinating when like the mighty has fallen.
Oh yeah.
And so I think nobody should aspire to be mighty.
Yeah.
Because we're all flawed.
Yeah.
And you don't want the veneer to come off and be like, yeah, but she's got a hole in her slipper. Like, I know I have a hole in my slipper. It's because I'm Scottish and I don't want to buy a new slipper. So
no, these work. So what about the hole?
Yeah. No, but it's fascinating. And I think Instagram isn't good for society in that way. It's really interesting when, and you would have this too, because you're in an area where there's a lot of tourists. Mm. It's fascinating to watch tourists try and perfect the selfie and do all this stuff. And like, meanwhile, their toddler's wandering away.
Yeah.
Or they're like, I mean, people have died because they've walked backwards off a cliff. To get the perfect selfie.
Yeah. But also, you know what? Even if you spend your whole time at your children's concerts or wherever you're videoing them, if you spend the whole time with the video or the, let's say the iPad or something, you didn't see it.
Mm.
Because I had children before those devices existed and I was there. That's it. And then I had the video camera, which was a little screen. And then I had an iPad. And in none of those cases where I had something in front of me, was I experiencing it, because it's that energy.
It's so tricky because they make such a big deal about how social media connects, and we're certainly an example of that. But there's definitely something to be said about being in the here and the now and smelling the smells and hearing all of the things and being present. And it's hard because of this sort of hustle environment and culture we're in, that you feel like one, you're going to miss out, or two, you're not going to achieve, and you're going to fail if you don't kind of run on that hamster wheel nonstop. And I think it unfortunately needs to come with with life experience and proving to yourself that you can go slow and mm-hmm. you can go within and you actually do have original thoughts and ideas. Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating to me that I talk to women who want to write a book or they've had a novel bouncing around in their brain for the last 40 years, but they think they're not creative. Well, I think they're not creative because they're spending so much time consuming.
Yeah.
And if you just go quiet and go within, the ideas that you've had that have been percolating mm-hmm. sort of bubble up to the surface, but you're so scared mm-hmm. of giving yourself that time to go dark because you might miss out, the fear of missing out or mm-hmm. or the fear of making money, that they don't give themselves that gift. And I don't know how to create it. And people are like, oh, okay, well, once I hit a certain financial goal, then I can unplug. And I don't have any, if you have advice, tell me what to do or tell me what to tell people. Cause it's tricky, especially if you have to make a living or you have to do this to, and have trust and faith that it will work out.
Yeah. I think it's worth going quiet and thinking about what you want.
Yeah.
And really exploring that for a while.
Yeah.
I think it's worth really then looking at what of those things do you really need that really mm-hmm. fill you deeper than just that moment of, you know, consuming or that moment of, you know, at the purchase. Because, you know, we've all been there where we go shopping and then we get home and we kind of don't even care about it anymore after a very brief mm-hmm. time. It's like a hot bath. When you come out, you get cold again.
Yeah.
I like that metaphor.
And I think, you know, it's about really bathing yourself in that warmth of what you really do need. Mm. You know, and a lot of people are talking about, I have less money now, thanks to the pandemic. Mm. But actually I have more than I need.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
I'm realizing that in relation to my clothes, I have no intention of getting rid of any of them, but I actually don't, you know, once we have stuff, then where do you keep it? And how do you look after it? And there's a lot of energy goes into the maintenance of the stuff we never needed in the first place.
Very true. Yeah. So, and on top of that, like, I think there's also something to be said for being able to sit with not knowing. And being okay with understanding that at times we won't know all of the answers. There's a lot of pressure to have all of the answers and to have everything figured out and to know our path and to know what we're doing at all times. And it's just not really that possible. You know, we live in a world that says that, you know, often at 16 years old, that we're supposed to know exactly what we're going to do for the entirety of our lives.
Yeah.
And that's just not physically possible.
No. And as you've said, we're constantly changing and we're constantly, and there is also an inner knowing with being quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of inner knowing, well, actually, before we do this, I have a question and it's been bugging me and I'm just going to ask it in case somebody else has the same question. So I understand Instant Cooker that does that thing. I have like a crock pot as well. In the UK, we don't have the keep warm function, which annoys me because I did buy one for my dad and he had a keep warm function because our voltage is too high. So when it's done, it shuts off and that's it. And you can, obviously, if you were home, you could, I guess, put it back on and load to, I don't know. But so I don't tend to use that because the keep warm function is really cool. But I just have a big pot.
Like a Dutch oven?
Like, no, it's just a big, deep pot, like a soup pot.
Sure.
What is the difference between that and a crock pot?
So the soup pot you're putting on the stovetop?
Yeah, I have a gas stove though.
Okay.
So I can put it really low.
Nothing. So if you put it really, really low, you will achieve the same result if you keep the lid on. So mm-hmm. what you want is the food to cook and create condensation that beads up on the lid and then rains back down. And that's how everything stays kind of moist and lovely and juicy in the slow cooker. So I think if you have the ability to pay attention to your gas range and keep the light, the flame super low, you can achieve the same result. I think though, people feel more comfortable leaving the house with something plugged in versus an open flame. So there's definitely that. But I think you can absolutely recreate the same things. And I would just suggest giving it a go on a day you're home to watch and monitor, because then you'll know from the size of your pot and your own altitude and all that kind of stuff, how long it takes for beans to soften and your meat to tenderize and things like that. But many people put a Dutch oven in, which is like a very thick cast irony porcelain, it's coated with porcelain, pot in the oven on like 200 degrees and achieve the exact same result. And again, it's the same idea, but you're not leaching gas into your house when it's just plugged into the house.
So safety is the difference. Cause I used my big pot last week and I thought, why do I have both?
Yeah. So there's actually a really interesting bag called the Wonder Bag. And it is a very interesting eco-friendly company, and it's sustainable living. So it's called the Wonder Bag, and they actually, many people use them for camping. They actually give them to kind of third world countries. And if you can bring your beans to a boil and then take it off the stove, you put it in this sort of, it looks like a cat bed, large fabric-y bag and tie it up and then leave it alone for 8 hours. It will keep it at that temperature and then slowly bring it down, but long enough that your beans will soften and your meat will cook. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. So it's called the Wonder Bag. They're on social media. It's a lovely eco-sustainable company. Founded by founded by women, I believe. They sent me one and their story was just wonderful. But that might be helpful to you, because especially if you're going to leave the house, you can bring everything to a boil and then just take it off the stove and put it in a bag.
Amazing. Thank you for that tip.
You're welcome.
Okay, so coming back to inner knowing then, we like to ask some questions where we just listen to our internal voice, and you'll know the answer to these, even though you think you might think you know.
At some point, I'd love to get metaphysical with you and ask you who you think that voice is, because it's I love that kind of stuff.
Well, it's actually the first thing that we ever did as Kapitasu Cabaret. Very early on, within a couple of days, we did a challenge called the All Caps Challenge, which stood for Character Avatar Persona, and it was about those characteristics inside of you that inform your confidence. So we were tapping into the character or persona in us that is confident in the ways that we wanted to be. And so, and then we walked in that kind of tone of voice and that movement. And we looked in the mirror with that, and we did all kinds of activities, and it was so much fun, but so hard. And then we had quite a debate about whether whether that's fake or not, and it isn't. It's a part of us. And for a lot of reasons, sometimes we need to call upon those things, and sometimes we need to call those things out. And so there's a lot of thinking in the various fields of psychology about giving that a name and being able to sort of say, okay, this is that. And obviously in the world of cabaret, we would have a stage name and so on, you know, so there's kind of our, I guess you could say, alter ego effectively.
I think I had that, because I was, well, what, how would the crockpot lady answer this question? But then I absolutely agree with you with the kind of dichotomy that happens in your brain of, am I being a real person if I'm playing this role, but it's still me? So I would imagine with you and performing, I never thought about that before, but it must kind of scramble your brain a little bit.
It's all you, though. It is all
comes from you.
Yeah. It's a bit like who you are at an adult party versus who you are at your children's birthday party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Right.
They're all learning so much. I like this.
So, if you were going to go on stage and do any form of cabaret that you would want to, what prop would you want with you?
A prop.
Yes.
Well, I certainly can talk about a crock pot all day long. Mm-hmm.
Would you take that on stage with you for your cabaret?
So I don't know, because I think I would hide behind it and talk more about the features. And sort of, it wouldn't be me as much as the quote unquote crockpot lady. Right. I think probably a blank journal. Because I like the idea that we are the kind of creators of our own story, and each page, especially with a blank journal, I prefer the journals that don't even have lines, because I have really bad handwriting and so I can't stand the lines. But I like the fresh page, that every day is a fresh page and a new beginning. I like making yearly goals and monthly goals, weekly. We're now in Lent, so this is day two of Lent. And so I like the idea of kind of little baby mini challenges and recreation. And so I think kind of a blank journal symbolizes that.
I'm picturing a really fancy pen.
Yeah. I do. I like, so I have my purple pen right here. I do like gel pens, and it's interesting because I'm left-handed.
Right.
And so I smear. And so are you left-handed as well? So I smear, and I was so uncomfortable with that growing up. I was always worried, and I have this like, so I was called Steffi when I was little. I'm like, Steffi, don't make a mistake. Steffi, watch your hand. Like, don't smear. So I'm always in my 40s, but I'm still very aware, and I don't want to make a mistake, and I want to be careful. And so it's sort of nice now to be like, whatever, screw it. I don't really care. It's my journal. If it's ugly, it's ugly.
Right. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. So what is your cabaret name when you go on stage with your journal and your pen?
I don't know. Something magnificent and authentic. I think I've always sort of been drawn to like large characters, kind of like a Bette Midler type character, where you can talk loud and nobody's going to tell you to be quiet. So I think that an awful lot of me was needing to sort of play the part of being quiet, and nice girls don't do that. And that type of thing. So it'd be really nice to to shed all of that and be like, screw it. If I want to say a bad word, I'm going to say it.
Right.
Wow. Absolutely. Do you have a name in mind?
I don't. I've never been asked this before.
We like to put these in at the end. It's always a fun one.
But I think there's an inner knowing that goes, no, that's fierce.
Yeah, there's definitely something with magnificent in there, because I don't consider myself that way. I'm petite. I'm 5 feet. So I've always sort of felt like I don't take up much space.
Right.
And there's something about that word magnificent, because it's so big. And me with my left hand, it would be very difficult to fit on a note card without it like kind of falling off the end. So then I would rip it up and start over again. So it would be nice to just go for it.
Oh, I love it. Just be a mononym. I mean, you know, it can just be magnificence.
Yeah.
I mean, or it might just be magnificent. There's no rules. It's
a mononym. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love that, because that is about space.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Yeah. I'm constantly sort of, you cross your arms, you cross your legs, you try and make yourself smaller. Mm-hmm. Do you do that? Yeah.
That's how not anymore.
Yeah.
Not anymore. Now you're like, let's go for it.
Let's do this. Yeah. So what's your favorite lesson that you've ever learned? favorite. It doesn't have to be the biggest or the
fan. Yeah. I think I'm constantly relearning this for myself, but I think to trust that I am smart enough and I do know enough and I can do the things I want to do. And just because maybe younger, I labeled myself as not good at math, it doesn't mean that I can't figure out money or can't create money or something like that.
Oh, I love that. That is such an important message for women, especially. Mm. I don't say only women, but especially women.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank
you. And okay, I have one final question for you as well.
Okay.
Where can people find you?
I'm very Googleable. I'm at stephanieodea.com. And Odea is O-D-E-A. So it's STEPHANIEODEA.com. And I love to hear from people. I answer my own email. I really am a real person. And thank you. This was lovely. I have never given an interview like this before. You sort of made me a little misty, like I'm going to my inner child here. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been such a pleasure to feature you on today and to be in this space with you and to talk to you and to go over all the stuff that we've gone over. It's been really fun and touching as well. And so thank you so much for sharing your story and your truth with us today. Thank you.
You are an inspiration, Stephanie.
Yeah, absolutely. Or should we just call you Magnificent?
I should put that on my vision board. Yes, right? Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So thank you everybody for joining us today. It has been such a pleasure to feature you on the podcast today, Stephanie. Thank you so much. For everybody who's listening, please go check out www.stephanieoday.com. Check out her books. They are available on Amazon as well, aren't they? Am I right? Yeah. So you can check out her amazing best-selling New York Times best-selling author, please, the amazing Stephanie O'Day on Amazon, on her website. My name has been Ryan.
And my name still is Heather.
And we have been joined by the wonderful Stephanie. And today, we'd just like to say that it is your body.
Your body.
Your world.
Your world.
Your stage.
Okay. Your stage. Oh, yes. Nice to put your arms up.
Right? Take it up. Face.
Yes. Thank you
so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.